What happens when a species becomes extinct but's kept alive in the minds of a culture? What if there's still a chance that it may have not become extinct? Well, Margaret Middleback and Michael Crutzen went to Tasmania to find out if the Tasmanian tiger still exists and discovered a lot about the other rare creatures of Oceania. They wrote about their adventures in a new book called Carnivorous Nights on the Trail of the Tasmanian Tiger. Actually, it was published last year in hardcover. Now it's available in paperback from Villard Books. I'm very pleased that they were able to visit our show today. Hi.
Hello.
So what first drew your interest to the Tasmanian Tiger?
Well, for our previous book, which was called Wild New York, we spent a lot of time at the American Museum of Natural History right here in Manhattan. And when we were doing research, we kept passing this taxidermy of a Tasmanian tiger, and it's just a beautiful animal. It's got this ginger-colored coat with black stripes like a tiger, and it just really struck our fancy. And we started to do a little bit more research about it, and that led us to find out that some people thought it was still alive.
Well, it looks more like a dog or a possum to me. Yeah, is it feline in any way?
No, it's a classic example of a convergent evolution. It has the same niche as maybe a wolf, although it has the stripes of a tiger. However, it's very different because it's a marsupial. It's a pouched animal. Having evolved in Australia completely, it's completely other than the mammals that we know and love.
It's called the thylacine?
That's what scientists call it, a thylacine, to avoid the confusion of calling it a Tasmanian tiger.
Now, are marsupials only found in Australia? Were they ever in other parts of the world?
They were and they are. The Virginia possum is the one marsupial we have in this country. And originally, when all the continents were jammed together, marsupials had actually got their start in South America, and there are still quite a few marsupials down there. But Australia is the real marsupial haven. That area developed in complete isolation for millions and millions of years, and marsupials became the dominant mammal there.
When was the last thylacine? I'm going to start calling them thylacines instead of Tasmanian tigers. When was the last thylacine sighting?
The last one for sure was sighted at the Hobart Zoo, which Hobart is the capital of Tasmania, September 7th, 1936. That was the one last one we're sure existed. They actually had films of it, and it died in the middle of the night at the zoo because it was left out in the cold.
Well, that's 70 years ago, so why do so many people believe that the thylacine still exists?
There have been, every year there are still sightings. About once a month there will be an officially reported sighting. And over the years, even after that last documented animal died at the zoo, there have been very credible sightings. In the 1980s, a wildlife biologist was doing a bird survey in the northwestern part of Tasmania. And in the middle of the night, he woke up and he shined his flashlight, and he reported seeing a Tasmanian tiger standing right in front of him.
Well, how credible is that? After all, a lot of people spot the Loch Ness Monster and Bigfoot,
Yeti. Guess the difference being is that those haven't been proved to have existed at all. The tiger has been proved, or the thylacine has been proved to have existed. And Tasmania, it's 26,000 square miles. A large portion of it is still wild natural habitat with plenty of places to hide. So the scientists believed, yes, that this could be a credible science, particularly since he was a ranger with many years of experience in the field. And the only other thing that it could have been was maybe a waking dream. But he did count the stripes.
At the time, they took that sighting extremely seriously, and they had a 2-year secret search for it. They were so sure it was true, and they staked out. They put out sand traps to find the animal's footprint. They installed hidden cameras, but no evidence was found. So who knows what he saw?
But do you think this is because the thylacine has become such a powerful symbol in Tasmania? It's on beer ads, on buses. There's a coin with it. The Tasmanian cricket team is called the Tigers.
Yeah, I mean, this is an animal that's so unusual. It's just really hard to let go of for Tasmanians, and certainly for us. I mean, we still have dreams about the Tasmanian tiger and fantasies about...
You're not even Tasmanian.
Yes, you can only imagine what they think about it, what an Australian might think about it.
And you actually can see the last film of the tiger, and it's pacing around the cage. And for an animal to have been filmed, so recently and now to be gone completely, I don't know. I find that hard to accept.
Well, do you think that the Tasmanian obsession has something to do with guilt? After all, humans were responsible for the destruction of the thylacine population, and the last one died because of human neglect.
I think partly we don't take on the passenger pigeon as such an icon animal. I think partly is because it's such a charismatic carnivore, a large animal, fierce looking, which does, have connotations with a tiger. And I think it's that that powerful visual image which has lent to the myth.
My guests are Margaret Middleback and Michael Crutzen. Their book, Carnivorous Nights, On the Trail of the Tasmanian Tiger, now available in paperback from Villard Books. As naturalists, do you see Tasmania as a particularly interesting place to visit in search of rare species?
Oh, it's a stunning place. It's incredibly beautiful. It's relatively small. It's about the size of West Virginia, but they have incredibly varied landscapes, and they have very unusual creatures, and it's really a haven for a lot of animals that are extinct on the mainland of Australia.
How does it compare to Madagascar, let's say?
Well, there are a lot of endemic animals. It's similar in that way. Some of the animals might include the Tasmanian devil, which most of us know from cartoons, but that's a real animal, and it looks like a bear cub cut off at the knees, and it can devour a creature, bones and all, in one night and eat about half its weight.
Wow.
All in one evening of scavenging, and it makes this hideous screaming sound when it's fighting with its other animals. And that's just the tip of the iceberg on the strange creatures.
Well, there was always Errol Flynn, also from Tasmania.
A very strange creature.
In fact, Errol Flynn, talking of Errol Flynn, his father was a pretty well-known biologist in Tasmania, and he wanted to save the Tasmanian tiger, and I think in the early 1900s, suggested that an island offshore Tasmania be left for the salvation of the tiger's population, something which was never listened to, unfortunately.
Why have marsupials flourished in this area and not to the same extent elsewhere?
Australia developed completely separate. It's essentially a geological island, and so, for whatever reason, marsupials became the dominant form there, as opposed to placentals, which became the dominant form in this part of the world. In a way, it's happenstance. Marsupials just ended up filling all the niches that placental mammals fill here. So in kangaroos, there's about 45 different species of kangaroos, and some of them live in trees. Being a marsupial has certain benefits, and being a placental has certain benefits.
Are marsupials all carnivorous? Because you just talked about the Tasmanian devil, and you described the noises biting through bone and spotting all of that.
No, lots of them are
roadkill, but it's just some of the marsupials are?
Yeah, lots of them are herbivores, such as the kangaroos, which include the wallabies, a whole host of fascinating...
Wombats are marsupials as well.
Yeah, wombats are vegetarians as well.
How did humans destroy the thylacine population?
Was the one example where there was a concerted effort, we want to drive an animal extinct. In 1888, the state of Tasmania put a bounty on the tiger's head, or the thylacine's head, because they accused it of killing sheep. Of course, sheep are not native animals to Tasmania. It was brought by the British. However, it's unsure even if the tigers were killing sheep. But once that bounty was enacted, it took its toll.
Similar to what we have done in this country with wolves, although more recently we have made efforts to revive them, there are still some people who would like to see them totally killed.
The wolf was completely extirpated from England, and that's which is also an island. So that's in Tasmania. It's an island, and things go a lot faster. It's easier to get rid of an animal. There were originally only about 4,000 Tasmanian tigers living there at any given time. So it was a very discrete population. I mean, it was there for tens of thousands of years, living happily, but within about 125 years, human beings really did a number on it.
What are macropods?
Macropods are the kangaroos.
Uh-huh. That's just another word for kangaroo?
It means Bigfoot. Kangaroos have remarkably big and powerful feet, which allows them to hop great distances. One macropod we met is called a paddy melon. It's a type of kangaroo species, and we met it in a motel room we were staying in. It was a little creature that is a sad story. Its mother was killed on the road, and the owners of the motel had rescued this living Joey from the mother's pouch, and they were raising it on special formula, and a little woolen hat was its pouch, and it was hopping around our room and making trouble for us. It was very cute.
So there are many different kinds of kangaroos?
There's about 45 different types of kangaroos, and they really fill radically different niches. They live in forests, they live in canyons, even in trees.
So after all of your investigating, do you think the thylacine still exists?
Well, I think we went thinking it didn't exist, but then some bushies, or some tiger hunters as they're called, took us way out into the wilderness, into spots where there was no signs of human habitation. And they would give us these sly suggestions and saying, well, look at that place. That's a vast marsupial plain surrounded by woods at night. It will come out and hunt kangaroos.
But hasn't there been a project to clone the thylacine?
Yes, at the Australian Museum in Sydney, they had a very elaborate program to extract DNA from an ancient specimen. It was actually a pickled Tasmanian tiger pouch pup in a jar, which we visited, and it was really a poignant sight to see this little pouch pup preserved in formalin. And what they did was they actually were not successful with that particular specimen, but they extracted some DNA from a thylacine bone in their collection, and they attempted to basically recreate the tiger's genome in the lab, and the idea is that then they would implant the egg that they created in a similar species, and then that species would give birth to a Tasmanian tiger. Unfortunately, there aren't too many species that are similar. It split off from its closest relative 25 million years ago. So the closest relative would be the Tasmanian devil, which also has its own problems in terms of survival. So this is not a project that's currently on track anymore.
Well, I just read an article about proposals to clone Neanderthals. But the argument against doing it is that the clone would be the only one in the world, would have no relatives. Wouldn't that also be a problem with the Tasmanian tiger?
I think their idea was to create a bunch and release them.
And a lot of money's been spent on this, $40 million or so, I gather.
Actually, I think that was the projected budget, but I don't think they spent nearly that much.
Yeah, and they put it on hold. But their plan also was that the guy running the project said that they would spend 10 times that much on habitat preservation, because there has to be a habitat for the animal to live in. And also, I mean, one big question they talked about was, you know, what actually makes an animal? Is it its genetic code, or are their behaviors passed down through generations? And if that was true, the clone Tasmanian tiger is not going to know how to hunt. It's not going to know how to vocalize. Its mother would have had to teach it that.
And if it was taught by the devil, that might be a scary thing.
What is the situation in Tasmania? Is there still enough of a habitat for these creatures to continue to exist?
Well, as I said, about a third of it is preserved. But I think the big concern right now is they have these eucalyptus regnans forest, which eucalyptus regnans are some of the tallest trees in the world, certainly the tallest in the southern hemisphere. And they're being clear-cut at a pretty rapid rate. There's a healthy conservation movement which is fighting against that. However, it is a major concern, because that is one of the last places where the tiger existed. That's where some of the last tigers were trapped in the wild. So, you know, if they're ever going to come back, they have to have some place to hide out.
Your book also features some striking artwork by Alexis Rockman. Did he go along with you?
Yes, Alexis definitely came on the trip, and he made amazing ghostly artwork, which is actually all made from pigments made out of things like tree bark, dirt, even wombat scat that he collected on the trip and mixed with some kind of chemical that he brought with him. So each of the pieces, which is a watercolor, is made from some kind of native material.
However, there is no actual scat in the book, though, we could say.
Well, it was, but when you printed it, you left the scat out.
Yeah.
Well, we had to carry the scat in a guy gave us a bag of wombat scat and a bag of devil scat, which we carried around for weeks with us. It was delightful.
In the blistering heat.
Did you know he was going to do this when you brought him along?
We didn't know he was going to paint with scat. I mean, or his own blood, actually. At one moment, a leech attached to him. Tasmania is just rife with these land leeches, and one's attached to his foot. So he grabbed it off his foot, and it had already fed. So he pulverized it and determined to get revenge on the leech by making it immortal in the book by painting the leech with his own blood. However, there wasn't quite enough blood, so he forced us to bleed him. So this is traveling with an eccentric artist.
This book is a far cry from your last book, Wild New York, or is it?
Well, it's certainly farther away. It was halfway across the world to go to Tasmania and a place we'd never been before.
Well, we have leeches here.
But not on land. They're very polite. They stay in the water.
In some ways it was the same because we were determined to find out every interesting animal that lived in Tasmania, too. And it's similarly surprising. People don't think there's too much wildlife in New York City, and most of our friends don't even know where Tasmania is. They still ask us about our trip to Tanzania or Tanzania in Africa or New Zealand.
But the main major difference is it's a narrative written in a narrative. So we're working in the first person plural, the we, which was a whole new thing for us.
And the we is Michael Crudson and Margaret Mittelbach, their book Carnivorous Nights on the Trail of the Tasmanian Tiger, now available in paperback from Villard. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Great to be here.
Thanks for having us.